T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Demon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
So Peter King stopped on by earlier today and said a little something that, you know, we retweeted out, and people are like, well, wait a minute, you got to win a Lombardi Trophy before you start talking about that. Well, here's what Peter King said earlier that's got everybody up in arms. He was complimenting Kyle Shanahan, saying that if you were looking for the next Bill Belichick, you might not be way off by taking a look at Kyle Shanahan.
You know, Kyle Shanahan, and again, this is going to sound really like I'm overplaying my hand on Shanahan, but why he has a chance, and I mean a chance, put that in italic. He has a chance to be the young Bill Belichick. You know, this generation's Belichick, he's got a chance, is that he just figures out a way. And he says to Bobby Turner, hey, Bobby, you know, get your running backs ready. And then, by the way, go find a couple more that we might have to use if these guys get hurt. And Bobby Turner just gets them ready, and they end up playing really well. So, I don't know, my hat's off to the 49ers, to the coaching staff, and to those players for what they did in Foxborough.
A chance. He's saying it's a chance. It's not preordained. It's not done. It's not already happening. But the chance exists. And I think you'd sound pretty stupid by arguing against that. Like, what would be the really well-said argument that Kyle Shanahan wouldn't be that? Because he does have a universal level of respect amongst his peers, which are usually reserved
chance,
for older
right?
coaches and older, you know, guys with trophy cases that are full already. But he's just saying there is a shot that right. this guy is smart enough, has the pedigree, has the film study, has the game day acumen, has the communicating ability, not just with his team, but his superiors and the media. He really checks all the boxes that you would want a modern head coach to check.
He said a chance. He said put it in italics. Did we put it in italics when we tweeted it?
I don't know. Carl? Carl, can we? Does italics have Twitter? Or does Twitter have italics,
or vice
Carl?
Versa?
Yeah.
Scratch whatever. That. Reverse it.
Totally.
I think the only question, because it's clear he has a chance, but there are about five or six guys who also have a chance at doing that, because a lot of football is luck, injury luck, all sorts of luck.
Of course.
The thing that makes Shanahan the most interesting candidate is because he's got general manager's powers too, which means that he's going to be graded not only on game day, but on the 53 guys that he takes out to game day with him. So in that way, it's a little more difficult needle to thread, but of course he has a chance. He took a team that was dead in the water. I mean, and I can't emphasize dead or the water enough. It took him 2 years to shovel out the stable. And the third year, you saw what he did in the same way that Bill Walsh did the same thing, with the one difference being that Walsh closed the deal in year three. Shanahan hasn't. But it's absurd not to say that he doesn't have a chance. Of course he has a chance. He's positioned himself to be part of that discussion. So I mean, that seems to me a no-brainer.
You mentioned the personnel part of it, but given what Belichick has done, don't you kind of have to do both to be the next Belichick?
Well, Sean McVay, who I think is probably in this discussion, is not the general manager and doesn't make general manager's decisions. Cliff Kingsbury does not make general manager's decisions.
No, but what I'm saying is, Bill Belichick does, right? So if you're gonna fill that role, isn't that part of it?
Well, I don't know if it's part of it because I'm not sure what the parameter is because there are so few coaches that get to be both of those things that it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The big hurdle to clear is how many times you have a parade. And that more than anything else is what Bill Belichick is known for. Because if he didn't have six rings, people wouldn't be paying attention to his general managing acumen. You have to win it first, and then people will look at how you did it. So Kyle Shanahan, of course, has a chance. That was not sort of an amazing revelation by Peter King, and I don't mean to denigrate him for it. It's just, yeah, he's put himself there. The only issue is, can he do both jobs to the extent that the guy we all agree is the best coach ever has done that? Because there's only about three or four guys in the history of the sport who have done that, and three of them have been dead for a very long time.
I think what Peter was alluding to was that he is factoring in that GMing acumen right now. And he even said in his answer, look at what they've done at running back. Get me those two guys, and if they get hurt, get me two guys more. Those two guys didn't just appear and fall off a truck for Shanahan to coach up. Shanahan picked them for the delivery truck to drop them off. I mean, and so I think that he's already considering it. And what is unfair almost is that we sit around and talk about who's the greatest coach of all time. People aren't even considering that Bill Belichick was the GM. They're not. They're not factoring that in. They're just talking X's and O's and parades, like Ray said. So whether it's there or not in the soup of what goes into the are you most like Bill Belichick equation, of course it is. But people will not put it in the soup when they make it themselves and start discussing it because they're just going to go, what was your record? How many championships? But there is so much to it. And Kyle is doing it all so very, very well early on. Like we were saying just the other day, yeah, there's a Lombardi trophy, but there's only one of those. What you really hope to be in football is a team that when the stars align, you've got a chance to win a title. And this is a year. Look, here's who the 49ers are. The 49ers are a team that probably had a very good chance to win a title this year, but the stars refuse to align in terms of who's healthy, who's here, and who got hurt again this week. Every single time a Niner has a good game, you can almost bet that that guy is going to miss the next game or two with an injury. It's just gone that way this year. They can't stay healthy. If they played every game inside of a hospital, they wouldn't be able to stay healthy. So in many ways, it doesn't feel like their year. And having said all that, Pro Football Focus is saying that they're the number one graded rushing offense in football. Not bad for a team that's having an off year. They're the number one graded tackling defense. Not bad for the team that lost last year's defensive rookie of the year and doesn't have Dre Greenlaw, and a Hall of Fame cornerback has hardly played at all this year. The number two graded coverage defense. Again, let me tell you more about this team's secondary and how much we've worried about it, talked about it, just dissected it. And, oh, what do you know? It's still the second best in all football, according to Pro Football Focus. Fourth best route running. They still are very good at what they're allowed to be good at, whether it's starters, backups, third stringers. It's really impressive. It's impressive who they still are, given from a body count who they are not. It's amazing.
No doubt.
And it's why I think Kyle Shanahan should be in Coach of the Year consideration right now.
I think he has to be. And if they make the playoffs, he's got to be near the top of that list, given everything they've gone through from a injury perspective.
I will ask the audience as we take a quick break here. Is there an automatic number? Is there a win total? Is there a round of the playoffs? Not that the playoffs or a Super Bowl appearance would even be considered into the voting because it's a regular season award. But is there a step to this season that if the Niners take it, you will say, yes, indeed, that man deserves to be Coach of the Year? Is there a win total that would make Kyle Shanahan an automatic winner of Coach of the Year? Who else is in the running? We'll get all of our thoughts and your thoughts as well. 888-957-9570 is the number here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. We have, in about an hour and 15 minutes from now, the Tuesday trifecta. It's all about candy and kryptonite, because that's what's in our future this weekend. Certainly in the Niners' future, certainly anyone who might throw on a costume and go out for a safe, socially distanced trick-or-treating party. We got candy, and we got kryptonite. That's this weekend. That is our Tuesday trifecta topic. And when we come on back, is there a win total in your mind that would automatically qualify Kyle Shanahan, given all the circumstances, coach of the year? It's his. No one's going to take it from him. What's that number? 888-957-9570. We are brought to you by OSH, Outdoor Supply Hardware, has just brought the Classic Hardware store back, now with 11 great locations, plus with a new Club OSH Rewards program. You can earn points towards coupons on every purchase that you make. Learn more and sign up today at OSH.com. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Our insurance.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
The 49ers are a pretty damn good football team, all things considered. There's just no other way to say it. I mean, there really isn't. Look at what they've done. David Lombardi brought up pretty interesting piece. Wait, I didn't have it over here. I got it over here. Let me find this David Lombardi quote. Here it is. For a team that's put 20 players on the injured reserve so far this list, the 49ers are certainly better than their 4-3 record. Just look at their three losses. One came in the season opener against Arizona, a game the 49ers played without any starting wide receivers. The second came at home against Philadelphia with the backup quarterback, Nick Mullins, starting. The third came against Miami with Garoppolo obviously hampered by a high ankle sprain. When Garoppolo and the rest of the pass offense are healthy, the offense can look like it did in the bludgeoning of New England, cohesive and dominant on the ground thanks to the threat of balance. And he's right about that. You know, you put in Jimmy Garoppolo, you get to do things that are gaudy in the play action game because he's good at that. 51 of their 63 offensive snaps, the highest percentage of such plays in a game by the 49ers since ESPN started tracking these things, were play action or run design. That's who the Niners are. It's what they do best. And when they're doing it and they got their starting quarterback in, who else is in the game seems to be a tad, I don't want to say irrelevant, because of course it matters. But the next man up philosophy is absolutely underway for the 49ers. And I think that this makes Kyle Shanahan a legit coach of the year candidate. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here. 888-957-9570 is our number. Gentlemen, I ask you, is there a win total out there that would make Kyle Shanahan your coach of the year? No further evidence needed. This win total, you're giving it to him because of the circumstances. What would that be?
If you want to say straight up, no questions asked, I think it's 12, which would be 8-1 the rest of the way. But I think he's in the conversation at, frankly, certainly 10, if not 9 wins and above.
I'd split the difference and say 11. Because, among other things, Sean McDermott will be a candidate because he will be the guy who's going to end up winning the AFC East now that New England has died. I think John
or
Harbaugh
Flores,
is...
Flores, if Miami somehow comes on and wins that division.
Maybe, but I don't know how they're going to do it given the fact that they've now put their team in the hands of a rookie quarterback I don't know, you know, I mean,
we'll see.
You know, I mean, from what everything I read, you know, the players themselves are not crazy about this move, so who knows? But I'm just going to say Buffalo will be a factor. John Harbaugh is always a factor because he's always a factor. Tomlin is going to be a factor. And Andy Reid's going to be a factor. It's going to be a crowded group, but I think some of those guys are going to have more wins, and that's also the AFC anyway. I think the NFC will be harder, so I think the winner will probably come from the NFC, and I think you could look at Bruce Arians. You know, yep. he's, I mean, people are in love with the job he's done.
I think you could look at Kingsbury or McVay if those teams win double-digit games.
Kingsbury, McVay, and drawing a blank on the Packers guy for some
reason. Oh, LaFleur. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in the conversation.
The job seemed too big for him. This year, it seems like it fits just fine. So
yeah,
it's a kind of crowded field.
But Ray, there's really not a front runner, is there? I mean, there's not someone that's like, well, he's definitely the dude because you know that team turned it around from incredibly bad to incredible. Usually, there's a guy where it's like, yeah, that's probably the guy. So I do feel like if this beat up team gets to 11 or 12 wins, it's going to be hard to deny Kyle Shanahan. It really is.
I think the thing that I don't know is how many people vote on this.
Yeah.
And the smaller the group, the more difficult it becomes, because some guys just like to vote the off-brand guy to say, I'm voting the off-brand guy. It's always better if you do it more like the NBA does or like Major League Baseball does when they do the Hall of Fame, which is a lot of people who don't get to meet in a room,
yeah,
and that you sort of have to vote on your own wits. And if that's the system, I think Shanahan's got a leg up on most of those guys.
He definitely Andy Reid has.
Go ahead.
Well, Shanahan definitely has that national profile, right, where people respect him and believe he's really good at this.
Yeah, but I also, you know, again, without knowing who's voting, and I have to look this up, if people are in the same room and they're consulting with each other, they'll find a way to argue against nearly everybody. And because, as you say, there's nobody coming from way off the pack yet to steal this. It could easily be McVay because they didn't make the playoffs last year. It could certainly be, I'm groping for the next guy because LaFleur, for as little as he was regarded a year ago, still got that team to a conference final.
Yeah, they were 13-3.
The thing that makes it hard this year is that there's two National Football Leagues. There's about 10 teams that are really, really good and 10 teams that are god-awful. I'll tell you somebody who's going to be on this list. Be Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah. They keep winning, sure.
So here's my list. I got it written down right here.
So there's 40 guys on this 32-man list.
It's right here. Just this last line. And I want to show you that put it in Zoom. I haven't written anything down. Sean McVay, your AFC East winner, whether it be McDermott or Brian Flores, Kevin Stefanski, Cliff Kingsbury, Mike Tomlin, Mike Vrabel. That's the list. I think that any success the Packers have, someone's going to say Aaron Rodgers.
Success, he could be MVP.
Any success that the Buccaneers have will be Brady's to enjoy, not Bruce Arians. Any success Pete Carroll might enjoy will immediately be handed to Russell Wilson, who's having an MVP type of year, where Sean McVay is absolutely going to be the guy who, remember, wasn't supposed to do much this year. And look at what he's done so far. If Kyle Shanahan wins 12 games, forget it. Tear up the tickets. It's his. If he wins 11, it's his. If he wins 10, I think it's slipping out of his hands. If he wins 9, it's going to be tough unless like 5-6 more key players get hurt along the way to that 10-win season, 9-win season. Because the war of attrition, as we spoke about of this team, it's like a nuclear war. For the 49ers. For everyone else, they just got to deal with a player hurt here or there. For the 49ers, it's absolutely everybody. I mean, injuries to Jeff Wilson and Deebo Samuel are overshadowing what should have been a resounding win on the East Coast with nothing but positivity and feeling really good about it going forward. Every single time a player has a good game, every Monday comes with two questions. Did you win and who's the new guy on IR? I mean, 20 players already this season. That would be brutal over a full season. That's a monster number.
And really, 19 of those they've covered well, right?
I mean,
other than one player for one quarter, they've done a remarkable job of papering over those injuries.
And by the way, Mr. Allen was today cut from the practice squad.
That's a
so.
Bummer.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's probably never going to play another down in football. But you know, he was miscast, and the fact that he's no longer even on the practice squad team is a full on admission of we got that wrong. Like, that is going to be the single biggest blind spot of the entire year. I don't care who else gets hurt. I don't care what else happens. The fact that they turned to him in their moment of need and he was that ill-prepared to accept that is the only thing that was really, really bad about this season so far. That and
Kyle Shanahan got him cut. Yeah, Kyle Shanahan got him cut. Pure and simple. I mean,
yeah, or Saleh. I mean, I don't know who.
Well, you know, I mean, at some point, it's got to be the head coach who has to take responsibility for that because that's part of the deal.
That's fair.
So it's not going to matter much, but, you know, that was, and I do believe this more and more, that was in the period in which Kyle Shanahan thought they were better off than they were. And he says, well, we can, you know, we can finesse these games. It won't be that big a problem. And he played a dangerous game and almost lost it. And it took him until the Rams game to suddenly say, you know what? We've got to go back to who we actually are instead of trying to be cute with the schedule. And then you saw it again last week with New England. It's just, we're going to beat you up because that's really who we are. We are not the playbook. We are the guys who punch you in the face.
You know what's interesting about the Brian Allen decision is, in a way, to boil it down, I feel like what happened is Kyle Shanahan kind of underestimated Brian Flores' ability to be exactly what Kyle Shanahan would have been in that situation. I mean, how many times have we talked about Shanahan's willingness to attack an opponent's weakness and then just keep attacking it until they do something different and just keep doing it and doing it? And I bet if someone had sat down with Shanahan before he made the Brian Allen decision and said, listen, if you were Miami and you found out an hour before the game that we were starting a practice squad guy who we just promoted, what would you do? I bet he would have said, well, I'd throw at him. And if it worked, what would you do? I'd keep throwing at him. Right. And do you think Brian Allen can hold up to that if Miami does it? Probably not. I wonder if that would have changed the calculus for him.
Right. Don't have to go to Harvard to know to attack the weak link in the chain, but that quarterback did go to Harvard. So you might want to rethink this decision. And look, he might be playing way out of position. Promoting Jonathan Cyprian and asking him to have played corner that day would have probably, look at it this way, you couldn't have played worse.
No, and he at least is a professional NFL player. You know that.
Right. It couldn't have been worse than what it was, and it was a day that, again, it was so bad, it rattled everybody's confidence right to the core. It really did. Now, unfortunately, after a 33-6 thumping of Bill Belichick, handing Billy his worst loss in 20 years, it just feels like that with every single 49ers coming out party, it gets followed by replacing one of those players right back on their shelf and put them away in storage while they get healthy again. Deebo Samuel and Jeff Wilson just started getting regular reps. I mean, really think about it. Deebo's year started on injured reserve. It took a couple of running backs getting hurt or removed from the equation for Wilson to really get his opportunity. So they're finally now involved getting regular reps, and the both of them now have to vanish for a little while as they become the latest pair of, you know, game ball quality performers that instantly have to be shelved. Samuel and Wilson combined for 259 all-purpose yards in just the last two games. And this just really, really hurts right now because I know tomorrow's the big pivot day. It's Wednesday when you start looking ahead. But just looking ahead to Seattle, looking ahead to the next two games.
Yeah.
The 49ers got the two most potent offenses in all of football to try to keep up with. I mean, that's what you've got coming in Seattle and Green Bay. And there's only two ways to keep up with Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. it either takes points to match him or it takes a hell of a defensive effort to mute him. And even if you mute the effectiveness of Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, you're still looking at an afternoon where you're probably going to have to score north of 24 points to win.
Let me spin this positive for you.
Please. Right.
Well, I don't know
worried.
If I don't know if I'm positive, but at least spin it to silver linings, right?
Yes.
What you didn't explicitly say, but we're clearly implying, is both of those teams have very suspect defenses, right? So they will let you keep up with them if you play well offensively. So that's a good thing. The second part is, as crazy as this might sound, I still think the Niners are kind of okay at both positions. If Tevin Coleman comes back and Jamichael Hasty looks what like he looked last week, which why not? I mean, he's young and fresh. I think they have a guy who can fill the Jeff Wilson role, and I think they still have a couple of guys in McKinnon and Coleman to spell him with when necessary. So I think you can solve that problem, and I still believe that trio is good enough with this scheme to do some damage against both Seattle and Green Bay. In the passing game, it's not like going to New England where even with a mediocre team, Bill Belichick is going to sort of limit George Kittle. These are two games where George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk can flourish. And no, it's not as potent an attack as it was with Deebo Samuel, no question. I love Deebo Samuel. But George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Trent Taylor, Kendrick Bourne doesn't sound impossible to have success. So, yes, it's going to depend on Kyle scheming the hell out of these games. Yes, it's going to depend on guys like Ayuk and Bourne and Hasty stepping up. But that actually, to me, in some ways sounds easier than if they had lost another defensive player, which at this point, you know, they're just literally running out of bodies.
These next two games are going to be fascinating for one other reason, in addition to the ones you cited. 49ers are going to have to win in the shootouts, which they haven't done yet, and they've really only done one time since this team turned the corner last year, and that was in New Orleans. And the one thing we kind of know, or at least have a better sense of, or delude ourselves into think we have a better sense of it, is that that's not what the 49ers do best. 49ers do best when they keep you from having the ball at all. And I don't know that either of these next two games necessarily put you in that position where you can have the ball for 38 minutes, which means at some point you're going to have to throw blows with them basically punch for punch. And it'll be fascinating to see if this team in this shape can do that. I don't know if can. We'll find out. But it's going to be a different way to win. And this is the most fun of all.
This gets to the point I was making about that time of possession thing yesterday that, sure, it's great. Of course you want to have the ball for 40 minutes if you want, but if you can. But to have it for that long, to dominate time of possession in that way, it's not just you running the ball well. It's the other guys going three and out a lot. And these two offenses you're about to face are much less likely to go three and out, which is to say a similar offensive performance, a dominating run game, is probably what you need just to split time of possession because those guys are going to hurt you too for the most part. So I would say it's just as important for them to establish those things and to possess the ball for long periods of time because it's going to be harder to keep the other guys from doing the same thing.
Yeah, obviously don't want anyone in the end zone any more than they have to be. But if Seattle's got to get into the end zone, like let's just call it, they're going to score three touchdowns on you. You don't want them to be 13 play, 8 minutes off the clock, touchdown drives. You almost want Seattle to quick strike you, to take the lid off the top of you. So they don't have a good time of possession. You get the ball back. You get to be the methodical team. Let me tell you, Indiana beat Penn State this weekend. I don't know if you guys seen this, but one of the amazing things in that game and the reason why it happened was the only way to get the ball back with enough time to score is to let them score right now. And Penn State's running back took the bait. He could have taken a knee on the one, and Indiana never gets the ball back to force overtime, and there is no two-point conversion, and Penn State wins the game. But the kid scored. He housed it. He shouldn't have. He took the bait, gave Indiana enough time to get that ball back. How often have you seen that explained in a game where they talk about, you know what they should do is let them score, and then even if that happens, it still doesn't come together. It happened in the IU-Penn State game, and then it happened a little bit later on Sunday, when that's what Detroit did against Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
Todd Gurley was talking about how I shouldn't have scored that damn touchdown, and Detroit doesn't get the ball back in order to get us at the very end of the game. In a
what
weird
was so
way,
interesting about yeah. that, quickly, is I actually think, because we've seen Todd Gurley make that play before, and I actually think what happened is there was one guy from Detroit who just let him go, but another guy tried to tackle him. And I think that kind of confused Gurley, so he just tried to break the tackle, and by the time he had broken the tackle, it was too late to stop his momentum from going into the end zone.
Look, this is why when you grow up and you see the sports writer who noticed the high school kid who does something like this, like all he had to do was go another 5 yards to score, but he took a knee at the two and ran out the clock. That's why that kid's on the front page of the sports section the next day. It is one of the hardest things to do, to sacrifice your own touchdown for the betterment of just winning and getting out of here.
And it's also just hard to it's just hard to program your brain, you know?
Totally. It's you almost can't begrudge the guy for doing it. And in the rare instance it comes back to bite you, it's happened, I think, 3 times in my entire life and twice this last weekend. So it's never guaranteed to work. But the 49ers either need 3 and outs or give up a quick touchdown and then get the ball, bleed the clock, move the sticks, 2-1 time of possession. That's how you beat these teams. And the Green Bay Packers are 2 weeks away, so we'll worry about them in 2 weeks. Right now, it's just Seattle. Seattle's got a Superman offense and a Lois Lane defense. Really. Yep. There is no doubt about it. They are the Seattle Seahawks, 28th in total defense this year. That sounds an awful lot more beat-upable than even the New England Patriots sounded last week. The Patriots do a few things very, very well. They're all defensively, and the Niners peeled their paint off.
Here's an interesting twist, though. I'm guessing you guys can both pretty quickly identify the best defensive player on Seattle. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I
Jamal
think,
Adams. I mean, if you want.
That's not a bad one. I was going to say Bobby Wagner.
Sure.
Yeah, I was fumbling around for the name, but that was who I would have guessed.
That's the exact opposite of New England. And so much of the success of the Niners was just embarrassing the Patriots linebackers, either by blowing them out of the picture with blocks or by beating them with the Yak squad, right? Bobby Wagner, I'm not going to say he single-handedly shuts down the intermediate passing game, but he makes it a lot harder. So the things the Niners are probably going to have the most success with may be a little different. You know, it might have to be more between the tackles running. It might have to be more opening it up a little bit if you can trust Jimmy to go a little deeper to guys like Kittle and Ayuk and Bourne.
And maybe, especially if Adams isn't playing, it's the right time to, like you said, fish on the deeper side of the pool.
Yeah.
Also got this note from Dave Lombardi. Jimmy Garoppolo's 35-yard strike to Ayuk on Sunday was his first completion of the season that traveled more than 20 yards in the air. Garoppolo was generally effective on such throws just last year, completing 20 out of 35 of them, but has opened just 1 of 10 so far this year on a ball that has 20 or more yards traveled in the air. His 35-yard strike to Ayuk, the longest in-air completion of the season. Just 35 yards. That's it. I mean, it's not like they've been testing this really at all. It's because of that offensive line. It's because of the philosophy to embrace the three steps, 2.5 seconds, and the ball is out. so you don't have time to run long, deep pass patterns or anything like that. But
the line's been good, and Seattle has no pass rush. So if you're going to break it out to score with Seattle, this feels like a good week to try going deep a little more.
The invitation is there. Seattle is inviting you to try to do that, and I think that that is an invitation that Kyle Shanahan might be accepting, which is, again, a shame that Deebo Samuel is not playing in this game. It really, truly is, man. This is one of those where you could have used him greatly. 888-957-9570. At the top of the hour, we return to the King. Peter King comes up on 95.7 The Game at 5:30, a Tuesday trifecta. Candy and kryptonite. We will have a Halloween candy draft. We're even going to be talking about favorite costumes of the childhood. So stick around. All the nostalgia that they're taking out of the Coke sign when they tear it down south of Market will be coming up a little bit later on today. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. It's officially time for a temperature check, baby. Oh, yeah. Temperature right now, thanks to the Exergen temperature check, it's 72 degrees and sunny in San Francisco.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
At the top of the hour, Peter King is going to be here with us on 95.7 The Game. He said some interesting things about Kyle Shanahan you're going to want to hear. We even asked him about DK Metcalf making one of the incredible plays of the entire year. And I want to set this up because Buda Baker was mic'd for the game. What you're about to hear is a whole bunch of running, which, let's be honest, may not make for the best soundbite in the world, but I want you to listen carefully because you're going to hear the initial Buda Baker interception. You're going to hear the ball hit his chest, hit his pads. You're going to hear him start running, and you're going to hear his strides. You are going to hear his pads bouncing on his body, jostling the microphone. And then I swear to God, if you listen closely, you're going to hear running up behind him. It's DK Metcalf. You can hear Metcalf closing on him. You hear the tackle. Then you hear Buda Baker bounce up and celebrate an interception, which he just returned inside the 5-yard line, which is a hell of a play in itself. But he could not believe that he got caught from behind from where he was, from where DK Metcalf started. And he admitted as such in the only spoken words in the entire highlight. Listen to this.
How'd he catch my ass? I was tired as hell, boy.
I'm trying to tell you down.
He ran me the down.
How'd he catch my ass? It was an amazing play. It really, really was. It's the best thing you might see on a football field all year long. You know what it kind of reminds me of? Kolsky, you'll remember this. First play of the year, first game of the year, Paul Konerko got a ball, a grounder hit to him, which he basically fields with his glove, through his legs, over to first base, and it was an amazing play. And on the opening day of Major League Baseball season, everyone who saw it said out loud, that's the play of the year. I don't care what else happens this year. I don't care what else happens this year. That's the play of the year. I can't think of what athletic feat would have to be performed in a football game to trump what that moment really
How'd
was.
How'd he catch my ass?
Yeah.
There is one thing.
But yes.
There is one thing.
Yes.
You do exactly what DK Metcalf did, though at the end you don Beebe the play and punch the ball out of his hand through the end zone for a touchback.
And
you get the possession back.
Okay, so he could have improved upon it slightly. We'll just have to leave it as one of the most amazing raw feats of speed we've ever seen. By the way, when it comes to raw feats of speed, We've got a most amazing thing again to wrap up for today's show, and it's all about speed. Nice. But you'll have to wait about an hour.
How do you catch my ass?
While we're doing the fun football soundbite segment, I asked the studio to cut me a couple soundbites. Did we end up finding it?
So thumbs up.
We talked a lot yesterday about George Kittle calling everybody a bunch of psychopaths. And we didn't have this sound yesterday, but it made me think of this play. And what you will hear on this play, as I describe it, and this did not require being mic'd up. This got picked up by the parabolics on the sidelines. I kind of think this is exactly what George Kittle is talking about when he talks about playing with a bunch of psychopaths. But just listen for the end after the play. And you'll hear Jim Nantz calling the play. Listen for Debo's voice at the end of this clip. Hit it.
18!
Full allotment of timeouts. Samuel.
did you hear that?
Yes.
That is the sound of Debo Samuel cracking a defensive back on his way to a first down, and then that's the joy he feels after delivering a blow in a football game. Can we have it again?
18!
No, not the whole thing. Just the cackle. There it is. That's a psychopath. That's what that is.
It sounds like the cackling refrigerator thing that the Joker, Jack Nicholson's Joker, carried in his pocket at the end of Batman, the Michael Keaton
it's a
one.
Great call.
That's what it sounds like. And really, the psychopath, that's perfect. It's what Kittle's calling for. I love playing with psychopaths. Look at Kittle. I don't remember who it was, but he makes that block in the end zone, and he's coming up, and he's laughing. Like he's crying laughing at a pancake block as he rolls the guy over. Last year, you got Debo Samuel doing that in this past game. And
I don't know that there's another team where you see guys standing up after blocking somebody smiling more than the 49ers. They got a handful of guys. Juszczyk does it too. They got a handful of guys who, after a big play, you'll see the face on like someone who delivered a block, and they're just laughing. It is really fun.
That's why George Kittle gave us one of the great sound bites. Again, can you play the George Kittle, love playing with psychopaths sound bites? Again, I cannot believe he calls out Pierre Garçon as his inspiration. He does, but the sound bites just, chef's kiss, beautiful.
Well, yeah, I mean, football's a violent sport, and if you don't kind of go to that dark place and be violent and be physical, you're not going to last very long. And Coach Shanahan always talks about, find the dark place. I mean, I'll never forget, the first person I saw, go into a dark place, Pierre Garçon. Like, his mindset when he goes into the game, it was incredible. I mean, you saw he'd punch himself in the head like this after first downs and stuff. And that was, the first look I really got at it. But then the longer I've been here and the more Kyle talks about it, the more you see everybody kind of goes to that dark place. And like I said, it's a violent game. And it's fun to be a part of a team with a bunch of psychopaths because I fit in really well here.
One of those mild-mannered psychopaths certainly is Fred Warner in the year that he's having right now. He's getting all the attention from the odds makers in the desert. As Fred Warner, now his Defensive Player of the Year odds, he's on the big board this morning. Miles Garrett's going off at 2-1. He's the favorite, followed by Aaron Donald at 5-2. T.J. Watt is going off at 13-4. Khalil Mack at 15-2. Then there's Fred Warner sitting there at 25-1. Fred Warner was on with us a few weeks ago. We had him for our weekly Inside the Locker Room conversation. He was very excited about the 10 pounds of delicious meat we gave him at the end of the conversation. But in the middle of it, he talked about how he's evolved in this defensive system.
I mean, overall, probably just understanding offenses. Early on, the last thing I was worried about was trying to figure out what an offense was trying to do to attack our defense or myself individually. I was trying to figure out what the plays were, where I needed to be and that type of deal, But now that I'm past that and I can, take it another step, I'm able to really dial in on offenses, starting to see similarities in each offense that we play and how they want to attack us. So then I can put myself in a position to make plays and, help direct the rest of the defense, put themselves in the right position.
For a guy who is, again, on Sunday playing his 40th career game, he doesn't even answer a question about his own defensive ability. He's talking about what he recognizes now on the field, and that is next-level cerebral player stuff. Everyone, just by virtue of being on the roster, you're a physical specimen, you're an athlete. How quickly can you process it all? And the fact that this early in his career, he is already at the let me interpret what the offense is about to do, not let me just make sure that I'm running the right play defensively, that I'm in the right position, but he's looking to react to what he's seeing, is why he is getting Defensive Player of the Year odds.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That soundbite's really cool because it's the exact difference between, wow, this third-rounder rookie has given us a lot more than we expected, and, oh, you're a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. I mean, that's the difference. It's going from the level of I'm in the right place based on the call of the defense to the level of I'm a step ahead because I know what the offense is doing.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about Bobby Wagner yesterday as a pretty good comp here, and this is about the time that Wagner broke free, broke out as a player you had to notice. And I think that's sort of, maybe that's how quickly you need to have to learn how to play that position, because it's the position that basically it's the center of the defense, because you have to know where the other 10 guys are and you have to know where the ball's likely to go. And it really did start, I think, for Wagner in 2015, which was his fourth year. So I think this is getting more and more to be the logical comp. And if that's the logical comp, then Fred Warner's in for some good years.
Yeah. No doubt. No doubt about it. So we asked Peter King about Fred Warner, about that incredible DK Metcalf play, but of course we start with what the 49ers did to undress Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots in Foxborough. Stick around, Peter King, and then at the end of Peter King's interview, we're going to open up the phones to get in line for the busiest Tuesday trifecta we have almost every year. There are two Tuesday trifectas that officially stand out as more responded to than the rest. And ironically, it's about food both times, because the Thanksgiving side dish draft is hotly contested every year. ESPN covers it. Several networks do. The Halloween candy draft is happening at 5:30 today. Today's Tuesday trifecta is about kryptonite and candy. And that's coming up in just a little bit. But right now, it's time to say hello to the King, Peter King from NBC Sports. Welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Peter King, the one and only, joins us here at 95.7 The Game on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line to talk about a rousing win for the 49ers in Foxborough, the week that was and what is coming up in a very interesting, moving quickly now, NFL season. Peter, thank you for joining us here once again. How are you, sir?
Everything's going well. That was a tour de force, as Garoppolo told me on Sunday night before he got in the plane to fly back. It could not have gone much better. Now, I thought individually for him, it probably could have gone better. But as far as the team goes, they absolutely wiped the floor with a clearly declining New England Patriots.
Yeah, and I don't know if they are responsible for ending the dynasty, but it felt like that was the game that drove some nails home and the coffin shut for whatever the last 20 years was. And God bless the Patriots for two decades of unstoppable brutality over the league. It is so impressive. But we knew, Peter, that the Patriots had a lot of trouble scoring. Where we were shocked is that the 49ers undressed Bill Belichick's defense.
Ran roughshod over.
Something else.
I mean, here's what, Sunday night when I just go back over these games and I just look at every game and try to figure out what I might do and I didn't know really that I was going to get Garoppolo, but right after the game, I just started looking at things and I said, holy cow. I said, you could argue that the fourth and fifth running backs on this team, after Mostert, after McKinnon, after Tevin Coleman, you could argue the fourth and fifth backs are Wilson and a guy nobody has any idea who he is named Jermichael Hasty. But in my opinion, if, you know, when Kyle Shanahan got on that plane and he sat there and I'm sure at some point he looked at the numbers, he had to look up at John Lynch at some point and said, John, do you realize that Wilson and Hasty gained 169 yards and averaged 6.5 yards a carry against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots in Foxborough, Massachusetts? That's one of the feats of the year. It's tremendous. But it just goes to show you that, look, I'm sure that every San Francisco fan, when the game against Miami happened and the Dolphins are prancing off the field, a bad Dolphins team, you all think, prances off the field after putting up 43 on the 49ers and winning by 26, and you just say, that is, you know, it's wait till next year for the 49ers. You know, Kyle Shanahan, the reason why he is, and again, this is going to sound really like I'm overplaying my hand on Shanahan, but why he has a chance, and I mean a chance, put that in italic, he has a chance to be the young Bill Belichick, you know, this generation's Belichick. He's got a chance, is that he just figures out a way. And he says to Bobby Turner, hey, Bobby, you know, get your running backs ready. And then, by the way, go find a couple more that we might have to use if these guys get hurt. And Bobby Turner just...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.